Hello, everyone, and thank you for coming to the joint call for American Association of Blind Teachers and Library Users of America. And we have a panel here to discuss the parental acknowledgments being required by the National Library Service for minors to use any NLS service. First, I'm going to ask that everyone except our panelists, and you know who you are, to please remain muted. We have a series of questions for our panelists, and then if time permits, we will take questions from the audience. But I want to give our panelists a chance to answer these questions first. And I think hopefully it'll answer a lot of the questions that you may have in the audience. And then, if there are topics that were not covered by the questions for the panelists, we will get to those at the end of the presentation. So, with that, I'm going to ask that the panelists briefly introduce yourselves, starting with Director Broughton.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for having me. This is Jason Broughton, Director of the National Library Service for the Blind and Print Disabled at the Library of Congress.
This is Kim Charlson, and I'm the director of the Perkins Braille and Talking Book Library in Watertown, Massachusetts, which is the NLS-affiliated regional library for Massachusetts. And we also provide Braille services to a few other states: Maine, Vermont, New Hampshire, Rhode Island, Washington, D.C., Tennessee, and North Carolina. So we do a lot of Braille as well as providing talking book services for all of our Massachusetts borrowers and borrowers in Rhode Island as well.
This is Mike Marlin. I am, excuse me, the director of the Braille and Talking Book Library in California. We are also a regional NLS regional library. We serve 48 counties in Northern California. California is one of the few states that has at least two regional libraries. So we serve the population in Northern California, and Braille Institute Library serves Southern California. We also provide Braille as well as audio and other services to eligible patrons throughout a very large geographical area. We've been around since not as long as Perkins, but since 1904.
This is Alicia Zawaro. I'm the literacy specialist at the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind. We service 67 counties, and we're the 68th.
Megan Lindberg here. I'm a parent of a visually impaired student as well as a TVI. Been working in the school systems now for about 7 to 8 years. Started at Florida School for the Deaf and Blind and am now an itinerant teacher.
I'm Savannah Lindberg. I'm Megan Lindberg's daughter. I'm a freshman at Florida State University. I graduated from the Florida School for the Deaf and Blind in May of 2024. And I have been using NLS Bard since I was about 6 or 7.
Okay. Well, thank you all very much for agreeing to be on this panel. And I'm going to start with a question for you, Director Broughton. Would you please give us some background of the parental acknowledgement requirements for NLS services for minors, and who mandated this change?
Sure, I can definitely do that. And again, thank you for having me. And what I will do is kind of give definitely some context between the library and NLS, which is part of the Library of Congress. So you will hear me say the term library quite frequently, meaning the whole of the body that we are directorate with. In addition to that, I will also make very specific differentiations between the individual account user and the institutional account. because there are some interesting questions that we are going to probably get into. And I want to make sure that we are all floating on that bandwidth of having an understanding that there are two specific accounts that we will be addressing. So let's start off and talk about the policy. Within this, this new policy that we have enacted brings NLS into line with the Library of Congress's policy for minor use and library collections. So in looking at that, let's talk about the Library of Congress itself. It is the Library of Congress, or reverse, Congress's library to which we all work. Within that, the library has over 181 million items that it is responsible for. And so over its 224-year history, it is primarily a research library in collecting what is actually going to be useful for people to consider. It does not circulate. Please keep that in mind. Still, the library has what is called an open catalog. Things are there as is. One will be able to see a variety of different, I would say, resources and materials when one is looking through that format, which means that there are going to be unique things that one would be able to enjoy or experience. And looking at that is to make sure that they have everything as possible in as many formats with their reader card. And for minors who are 16 and 17, they must also still obtain parental permission rather than just coming in and utilizing the collection. So in looking at that, that is the Library of Congress in its main piece, which we also said. NLS is a little bit more of the inverse of the Library of Congress. We have a circulating collection. You have two of our wonderful network librarians, and I think some others on the call that are here today. And within that, they help us navigate and move a large amount of wonderful content for our users. Within that, NLS is available to adults. And when we started, our primary start was really adult veterans. And then over time, we started to, of course, expand. And that expansion meant we would go to Congress and have a request, and they would usually approve it. So over time, we started with the veterans who were adults, and then we added children. And this would be about in the 50s. Then in 1962, we added music. And then we went in and started having reading disabilities. At that time, it was not called that. It was physically handicapped when it came to disabilities. Time went on, and then, of course, we started to go forward for many, many years. And then technology came about. Oh, I skipped a piece there. We also added those reading disabilities back in the 70s as disability rights continued going forward. Then we go forward into like the early 90s and into the 2000s. And then we sought an item specifically when it came to making sure that we could acquire different types of languages. And so the beginning of the awareness of the Marrakesh Treaty, followed by Karen Nellinger comes in, and wonderfully we update again to have devices, different types of devices, particularly e-braille machines and a host of other things, be part of this wonderful category that we do. Then we again went back to Congress for a different name change. We used to be called, of course, the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. We have now stricken that physical handicap and added what is known as print disabilities or print disabled. And then last, we again went back most recently and added reading disabilities specific with an emphasis in dyslexia. So that's kind of what we kind of went through to show you how we all navigated here. Different time. Within that, of course, we realize since we're dealing with adults, no library can continue its full function if it does not understand the life of a reader. So with that, we want to make sure that we have a really robust and balanced collection in which we cater to all groups of users throughout their entire lives. As we move forward with that, we have, of course, amassed quite a lot in 100 years, and it is definitely out there for anyone. What that means, however, is that when we are thinking about this and the need for this parental acknowledgement, the Librarian of Congress, who a lot of you know and love, hopefully, understands that it's important to have parents and guardians be part of this conversation, because we at the library are not going to exactly know the needs and learning styles of your children. And so it is best that parents be involved in that oversight. To enable that, we started with an NLS application working with our network libraries in that announcement. And that is to make sure that anyone who is below the age of 18 has the signature of a parent or guardian to sign off of it. And making sure that we understand that that is, of course, something very, very important in making sure that the person is going to be able to, of course, know that it's an open catalog with a variety of wonderful content, but also that we have devices and resources that are considered long-term loans. Since we are federal, that means that we are wonderfully utilizing in the best way and most efficient way that we can taxpayer dollars in a very unique format for the American public, for a lot of you on this call. And looking at that, when you sign off, the parent or guardian would be acknowledging, because we all know the child can't, in a sense, do that for us when it comes to these devices. It's going to be one in which the parent understands that when the time comes, if you no longer want to utilize NLS services or for other reasons, that the material would be, of course, returned back to the network library or to NLS, dropped in the mail, a variety of ways to come back. So it's a two-part item. The open catalog that we have, and you might hear me keep saying that, NLS is not one to censor. We don't ban. We don't remove books. You get the breadth and depth of our collection and our history as is in that wonderful way of serendipity. So as we move forward, it's important that we have parents at the table, per the Librarian of Congress, who has been a children's librarian. So within that, it's important to know that we have worked as diligently as we can with our network. We have moved forward in a very unified way. But yes, I'll be the first to admit, since I'm running the ship, there are things that we could have done better. Said this a little bit differently. Have a little bit more involvement. With that, however, I have heard the network. I've heard users. And we have adjusted and modified. And so with that, we continue to go forward on the individual accounts first, with institution coming down the line. And before I close, I'll say this last piece just to make sure people are aware. Since we are working with a variety of network libraries across the country and U.S. territories, each one is different and has different state needs. In this specific case, there are three states that we are working with our Office of General Counsel, the legal body for the Library of Congress, to help make sure that we understand the state laws that they have enacted that make it, let's say, an impairment to actually enact the parental acknowledgement. So with that, we have determined that we will work with these states in the best way possible to move forward as we go through our conversation. And in that, because their state laws, of course, they must abide by, we would never want that to happen in a negative way to them. We will respectfully work with them offline as we go forward with the majority of the states and U.S. territories. I now stop.
Thank you, Director Broughton. The next question is for Kim and Mike as regional librarians. Will you please explain how you've implemented this new policy and how successful the return rate of the parental permissions have been? And Kim, would you take that question first?
All right. So again, at Perkins, which is providing services for patrons in primarily in Massachusetts, we started working on the parental acknowledgement project back in October of 2024. And to date, we've done several things. We've used email as a way to communicate with parents. We did one email. NLS also did one or two emails reaching out to the parents of registered juvenile borrowers as well. And then I've done two physical mailings with the actual parental acknowledgement form in the envelope and you know, an envelope to return it, and also a link in the letter to allow them to complete an acknowledgement form online if that was more convenient. you know, thinking about the life of a parent, and certainly we have a parent on our call who can kind of reflect this, I'm sure that there are many, many competing factors in the life of a parent. And, you know, we've absolutely found that our return has been less than we would have hoped for. Our return rate right now, we had roughly 650 juvenile patrons under the age of 18 when we started this. And we've received roughly about 175 to 180 acknowledgments from parents. So that still leaves us over 400, about 450 or so that we have not heard from. So our percentage rate is somewhere roughly around 30%. So 70% we still have not heard from. An interesting statistic that I just discovered recently is 110 of those patrons who have not acknowledged yet will turn 18 by the end of 2025. That's a pretty big number, and I can't exactly explain why in this particular year we had so many teenagers, or, you know, I guess a couple years ago sign up, but that's a pretty big percentage that by the end of 2025 will turn 18, and this will be a moot question in their service delivery. So, in fact, I just finished doing a third mailing to the people, the families who have not yet returned their acknowledgement. And the wording was a little different this time. It talked about the fact that we need them to sign the acknowledgement or call us and do the acknowledgement over the phone with us, that if we do not hear back, there's a potential for their children who use our accessible library services to have their services suspended until a parental acknowledgement is available in our system. So we're trying, and we don't want that to happen. So we really would encourage them to contact us and also either update and put a parental acknowledgement on file or tell us, no, they just don't want the service for their child any longer, to tell us something. So that letter was a little different than the other two previous letters, but, you know, we continue to try to reach out to people that have busy lives, and, you know, this may not be the number one priority on their hit parade. So unfortunately, it's a little challenging to connect with and fully implement this policy.
Sure.
And I'll stop there and hand it over to Mike.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kim. Our experience, although our numbers are less than Massachusetts, and I'll go over that in a moment, our experience as far as outreach is very similar to Perkins, including email, including snail mail, including phone calls, NLS reaching out through email, I think at least twice in from October 1 through the end of the calendar year for 2024. We had, and oddly enough, that's interesting, Kim, your statistic about people who are going to turn 18. We actually had almost 30 people, 30 formerly kids, now adults, turn 18 by the end of the calendar year. So even though we did reach out to them, it ended up being a moot point. Our rate of return was about 79.9%, so just about 80%, with at this point 84 individuals and having reached 67 of them. Most of our youth participation is through school districts. For students who have institutional accounts, and we're at about 67% of our institutions. 24 specific schools who serve the blind, and then other school districts we've not had as good of a rate of return for. It's closer to 50%. And then we've also continued to reach out since the beginning of the year, when the I don't want to call it a suspension date, but the thought about the new calendar year and needing to get even more serious about reaching parents and guardians was presented to all of us at the regional library sphere. We have gotten a few more people on board, but you know, like Kim said, we are finding that this is not always the easiest thing to communicate with parents about. We've also had several new applications from those under 18 who have not signed the parental acknowledgement form yet. I think I want to say 6 applications in January that we're still waiting on. We're not sure. We've continued to reach out to those folks, and as of yet, have not heard from them. We've tried a couple different tweaks to the verbal and the written communications. And what we're looking at possibly doing, although we haven't made ultimate determinations yet, is to block those accounts in March and see if that triggers people, especially the BARD users who are unable to download, getting in touch with us, we hope. So our approach has been mostly successful, but with still a bit of a way to go. So I'll kick it to whoever the next participant is and say thanks.
Okay. Megan, I know I didn't address you in this question, but as a parent, how do you feel about the parental acknowledgement policy?
So I've been sitting over here taking some notes. One thing I need to mention is we signed Savannah up when she was 3. But because of all of the doctor's appointments and all of the stress of her doctor stuff, we did not use the NLS library account for 3 years because it was too overwhelming to get everything up and running. Her grandmother was actually the one who ended up doing it because she had the time to do it. And so one of the things when reaching out to parents is this is probably not high on their list of things that they are focusing on, especially if there's ongoing needs.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, this next question is for Director Broughton. What can be done to allow minors to maintain access to NLS services if parents do not or are unable to return the parental permission? For example, if parents do not speak English as their first language or are not simply involved in their children's lives?
This is a really important question for us. This is something that we want to make sure will be fully understood from our network because of the size of our country and its diverse, I would say, population that we have. So one of the most important things a parent or a legal guardian can do, or someone who just knows of this, would be to make sure that they understand that they have a network library and we have a lot of wonderful people who are working diligently so that they are aware of who minors are and how best to navigate and keep those services. So there would be a lot of dialogue and conversation. At this moment, we have not set a deadline for such an activity. We are talking with our network, as Mike has said, about what it means to have what is called some suspensions begin to be implemented for those who are ready to do so, but that is still an ongoing conversation. Our role is to make sure that we actually just exhaust our attempts to get in touch with parents and or legal guardians, because it can come through a variety of means. As some people said, phone calls, in-person, NLS doing it, the network doing this. A lot of trials are asked to be done to make sure we have done all that we can to get in contact with that person or their family. So it's making sure that we are able to also help them navigate the form if they have any questions and also fill it out properly. Of course, that's the positive side where the person says, I want the services. But in some cases, parents who understand and read what the information is requesting have decided to decline at this moment in time, and we hope that they would come back in the future. As we go forward with these types of challenges, however, it's important to know that there are, of course, a lot of things when it comes to the individual account that we are navigating right now, and for institutions, that again will come in line. We know that a lot of schools utilize NLS services, and so within that, we want to make sure that we do not have a disruption in service. And so a lot of things that we will begin navigating on that front, again, the institutional account, will start to be in the late spring and head into the summer so that there is no disruption within that. Because our main attention right now is ensuring, regardless of how you transition throughout your life from K through 12 into higher ed, your individual account can stay with you. The institutional account might have to change based on how your district is set up or how the services are set up as you go through your educational career. So our primary goal right now is those users who want an individual account can have assistance through the network and NLS directly to make it successful in a variety of ways and contexts.
Okay, thank you. Okay, the next question is for Alicia and Megan. Would you please explain how your school districts use the NLS service and how this new policy has made this process more difficult? What are some of the challenges parents have faced who want their children to continue using NLS services? And Alicia, would you take that first?
Sure. I actually, as the literacy specialist, am very excited to know that there's an institutional possibility as a school district, because I feel somewhat ridiculous that I didn't know that to begin with. But we've been doing like membership drives with our parents during parent engagement workshops to encourage them and work with them through the application process, because we were working through that individual process. We have no idea which students are registered as members and which students aren't. So if we go through that process of registering as an institution, we can serve our population better by supporting you all as NLS and helping our members and our students maintain their memberships until they are 18. So I'm excited to learn about that. And I'm sad to say that I didn't know about that. So thank you all. And also, Director Broughton, if you could explain how we could register for the institutional membership, or is that via the website?
Oh, well, this would be great. I'll make this even easier for you, even though I know my email might blow up from the staff. You can email me directly, and I will get you in touch with the most proper person to be in touch with at NLS, who will also probably get you in touch with your network library. So we might all get on the call, but if you would.
Okay. I'm sorry, Director Broughton, but we're not allowed to share email addresses on this particular Zoom platform, but I can share it with
that with our perfect
later. So
I appreciate you, April. I didn't know we would make
I'm sorry.
It works. And
I think our challenge also is that we service so many different school districts and counties that we're not really sure where all of the regional libraries are. Obviously, we know.
Well, can I ask a question? Where are you at in Florida? That'll help me.
We are in North Florida, so we have partnered with Daytona, and we have partnered with Jacksonville, and we've taken students to the library there, and they have helped us get them registered individually. But maintaining like, I forgot my password. You know what I mean?
I do.
So it would be wonderful if we could partner as an institution and
we can assist you with this.
Yay. Wonderful. I think that will help our students in Florida be sure that we have parental engagement involvement, because we have pretty decent parent communication via our parent engagement workshops and that kind of thing. So we can keep them involved as well as being sure that students have access to books because we want them reading. We don't want them to lose access. So,
and Megan, could you answer that question as well?
Yes, I was actually just going to pull it back up again. So the school districts that I'm in right now is primarily St. John's. Mm-hmm. We do not have any parent engagement workshops. We don't have any way to bring our visually impaired students together for any events. And I have brought up the NLS library to several parents during IEPs, but I even have students whose parents don't show up for IEPs. So to try and get a parent to sign up for NLS has been a struggle. I find that a lot of times we end up moving over to Bookshare or to Learning Ally because we're able to provide it more as a school district.
Okay. Well, thank you. Okay, the next question is also for Alicia and Megan. And Megan, I understand if this doesn't apply in light of your answer to the last question, but do these processes differ for, and I think you just answered it actually, but do these processes differ for the School for the Blind and itinerant settings?
So, no, because the way that we are signing up our students is by direct communication with the parent. I did also try and contact the Division of Blind Services and ask them if they had a general gist of how many of their students were in the NLS program, and they couldn't even tell me who was or was not in the program.
Wow.
I agree with Megan. That's kind of our struggle because I think we have several regional libraries in Florida, so we're unable to really know which students from which counties are registered, and we're not sure who registered, if DBS, the Division of Blind Services, make that initial recommendation when they're registered with them initially. So we're not really sure how that all happens. It's just I've worked with parents individually, and then they'll submit their library application online, and then it will come back and go, oh, you already have an account. And the parent's like, oh, I do. So those kinds of things are happening. So they may be registered, and it might have been years ago, and they just never utilized the service. So those kinds of situations are happening.
We also have the issue in Northeast Florida, Alicia, where St. John's County gets sent to Daytona, but Jacksonville gets sent to the Jacksonville Library. And when we as a parent were trying to set Savannah up for the service, we found that the service out of Jacksonville was so much better that we intentionally changed Savannah's address to be her grandmother's so that the grandmother could go ahead and contact the library with all of the needs that she had. And we have that issue throughout the state. So, yes.
Okay.
I do want to add one item as a comment here. Please know that my staff is on this call and they are diligently taking this information down. In having this wonderful partnership that NLS has with the states, that is what it is, a partnership. NLS provides, let's say, the big umbrella, the covering, while the states decide how they will carry those services out under their umbrella. Florida, being a big state and a state that I used to live in myself, graduated from Florida A&M, Florida State, and worked in Hillsborough County for a very long time, Tampa, Florida, I know many things about that state in a very unique way. And I want to say, I am sorry that you have had that experience. we are definitely going to be discussing what we are hearing from today's call with parts of our network in the very near future to make sure that they are aware of this, because this has caught us by surprise. Because again, this is a state level situation on how those services are delivered, unless you are uniquely calling NLS directly. So we will relay this information and conversation to them. Thank you.
Just know that some of that that I just shared was, what, 10 years ago? So it may be totally different now.
They'll still want to know. I appreciate it, though. Thank you.
Okay. The next question is for Director Broughton, Kim, and Mike. And what can teachers and parents do to increase the successful return rate of the parental acknowledgments?
I'll defer to Kim and Mike first. I just finished talking, so I don't want to hog the stage. So I will go with Kim.
All right. Sounds good. One thing that I'm in the final phase of doing, when this requirement came out, I was in the process of updating and modernizing the application for service. And as doing part of that process, we have incorporated the parental acknowledgement right into the new application. We have been averaging over the last year or so about 15 to 20 new juvenile patrons a month. And using the new application form, it becomes a bit more seamless for them to, you know, they're completing the application. If somebody's under 18, they do the section that requires that on the application. So it's built into the sign-up process now. Without that new application, we would have to, we'd get and people still use the old application because they're out there and they go to their file, pull the application, send it in. And we haven't done a big, large mailing of new applications as of yet. So we're still getting old applications for juveniles. Then we have to follow up with an email to send them the acknowledgement form and say, you know, we received your application. There's been a change in policy. We need you to complete this form, you know, i.e. parent or guardian, to complete that the form. And they usually come back right away because these are people who have recently engaged in signing their child up for services. So they're a lot more interested in finalizing the process and getting it done. So we found that was a really helpful step for us to create the new application with that requirement built right into it instead of making it a two-step process.
Well, this is Mike. I can jump in here. And we have also, we're actively updating our application to include the parental acknowledgement. We're almost there. Despite that, as I think I mentioned, we've had some what we thought were motivated parents signing up their children and then not following through. So I wish I knew the ultimate celebratory answer to what the solution is. For us, we've taken the approach of trying to incorporate into our outreach as well. We've sent letters to all of our school districts, for which we've had a modicum of success. There's a lot of turnover, as I'm sure you folks from Florida know, in the school districts in terms of administrators as well as itinerant teachers, TBIs. So we're trying to do our messaging that way. It's through our handbook. We're updating our handbook to incorporate this new element. We're trying to incorporate it into all of our presentations to various groups where there might be children or teenagers influenced by this decision, as well as the application. But I would love to hear from the folks from Florida if you have any suggestions for how we can engage our parents and our teachers better.
Go for it, Alicia.
Director Broughton, you were going to answer this question too. Sorry.
We'll let Florida go first, or anyone who has some wonderful items. This is a great conversation to share ideas of what people are doing. So I'd love to hear as well. Any thoughts?
I was just thinking maybe social media in some way. I know that's a challenge sometimes, but I think there's a lot of parents my age and younger who are very, very social media. And I know that from our institution, our school district, the parents are very engaged with the Facebook posts and just finding a way to share that out. And it's good that I was going to ask how you guys did recruit students or advertise about the services. So you just, you know, reaching out to the school districts and, you know, finding the outreach people is a challenge, I'm sure, with the turnover, but we would be more than willing to try to promote, advertise, make it part of our, you know, literacy programming to promote that. So I know that that's what I could do. I'm not sure as far as other school districts, but we definitely could do it through our school.
Well, this is definitely great. I'll chime in on the item. And for our moderator, note that I see some questions possible or some comments. What we believe that can happen that would be very helpful, and I know that teachers have a lot to do. I used to be one. And so it would be if parents have a question about the individual application and are unsure, and if a teacher is willing to help explain the information, if a parent were to come to them saying they weren't sure what it is, that can be one action itself. Another would be the network library within their state. But as I'm hearing some things, I'm a little bit less sure in some areas until I can check in on that, would be to make sure that they reach out to their network library, who can also assist them. And if all else fails, you can always reach out to NLS, National Library Service. You can look us up on the website, the web, and we would also work with you to help you understand the various components and walk you through the information. And also, again, try to allow you to know that there are many ways in which we would provide formats and some very specific forms if needed, and other additional opportunity ways to complete that application if it needed to be done in a specific way from a federal level. So we have that as an assisting item.
I also feel like if we were to have the Division of Blind Services, when we have to do our contracts, like for the different different age levels, if they would just provide brochures in general, that would be a great way to reach out specifically to that population.
Oh, great idea.
Hi. Well, thank you all so much. I didn't know Director Broughton, or I think someone was about to say something. I don't want to cut anyone off.
Well, this is Mike. I was just going to say that we have found a really good partner in our Department of Rehabilitation who do work with transition youth, and they've gotten the word out really well for us. So some of our success came from their assistance. And I will continue to give Facebook a try. We have quite a few subscribers, but for whatever reason, we've not gotten a great return from the Facebook posts, but maybe we need to get on TikTok or something. I don't know.
Okay.
April, this is Natalie, the host. I do want to let you know Savannah has her hand raised, and I know she's one of the panelists.
Okay.
So.
I'm sorry, Savannah. Go ahead.
Hi. So I just want to say that, like, as far as ways that we can improve this, one thing that I would recommend as, like, my experience as a student is making sure that we have a way that you can easily look up which library you belong to, even if this is, like, something that's, like, in your portal, or if there's something that you can go search up, like, online. because when I was younger, I had experiences of I would call the library and I'd give them my information and they'd be like, you're not a patron at this branch. You need to go to another branch. And I was like, well, what branch is that? So that was always kind of like a struggle is like, which branch am I looking for? And when is national where I need to call and all that sort of thing. So maybe including making sure parents are aware of that, like which branch their child belongs to could also help in improving communication. Another thing that I would say is that I know several people who have accounts with NLS that they have not utilized in years. And kind of like what Alicia was saying, there can be issues of trying to register an account and that email address is already used. Oh, I have an account. So making sure that patrons that maybe haven't been using their account very much recently, send them an email, be like, do you know you're still registered with us? You know, that sort of thing. Make sure that we have less confusion as far as trying to call back or trying to get in touch with the library and having trouble figuring out who to call and what's going on and where's this extra account and that sort of thing.
Thank you. And I'm sorry, I didn't realize you were trying to speak, Savannah, so I didn't mean to intentionally exclude you.
It's all right.
Jump in anytime.
Okay.
And this next question is for everyone. And Savannah, if you feel comfortable, maybe you can answer it first. What is a common sense approach to managing minors' access to online book content?
Could you define what you mean by a common sense approach, please?
I just mean, this is when we were first coming up with the topic for tonight's call. And we weren't, at that point, really sure exactly what the parental acknowledgments were. So, and I know Bookshare has a different approach. Learning Ally has a little different approach. And we just want to be sure that minors have access to books. And I, too, have been an NLS patron since I was the age of 3. And I did use it starting at that age. And I read stuff as a minor that I probably shouldn't have read, but it didn't really hurt me, I don't think. Some of it I didn't really totally understand at the time. But what should we be doing?
I think the best solution that we have currently, especially with all of the laws and the things that we have to consider, is a lot of what we're currently doing with that. We're trying our best to keep students and their parents involved in the process. And so I think ultimately that is the best decision, is to try and make sure that everyone is involved and everyone does have that access.
Right.
So I'd say that the most common sense approach would probably be to I appreciate that NLS has one large, catalog, and that it's not necessarily segmented. And I think that we do need to move forward with that, because if you get into categorizing, okay, you can view this, but you can't view this, then it gets a lot complicated. So I do appreciate that we have one open catalog. I just also understand that there are people who don't want that. So I think that what we're doing is the best that we can really do for right now.
And that's what I was aiming for. So thank you, Savannah.
I have a question for the librarians. If students call in to request books and they request something that is potentially, even though the parent has signed the acknowledgement, and they request something that potentially is outside of their age range to read, how do you guys handle that? Because we're at a school, so we have to control everything by age level. And that does get challenging, as Savannah says, and it would be difficult if we went that way for a national library.
Kim, you want to take that one first?
Oh, Mike, I thought you were going to take that one.
I beat you to it.
Sure. Well, it's a very interesting question, and certainly librarians are not known for wanting or being engaged in any kind of denial of requests.
I agree.
So it's not what we do. Now, certainly, and you know, my library is located on the campus of the Perkins School for the Blind, so we have students that come in. But most of the patrons, juvenile patrons we deal with, are either through TBIs or their parents, or some of them call themselves. And, you know, my staff are trained basically to fill requests. Now, you know, sometimes we'll get a teenager who calls and asks for some kind of bestsellers that, you know, may be a little racy. And, you know, they're calling in on their own. They're kind of snickering in the background, you know. Sometimes we get those little clues like, oh, this is some kids, you know, that are wanting to get their hands on adult books. But I also have my own life experience to kind of fall back on when my staff come to me and they'll say, you know, I had this voicemail from a young kid asking for a book that's, you know, pretty explicit. And, you know, we'll check the record. They're 15, 16. You know, I don't block that. I don't believe in denying them, you know, and I have had situations where the kid was 6 or 7 and all the requests coming in from the family were, you know, the hottest bestsellers on the top of the adult list. Well, it was quite evident to me that, you know, that was for mom and dad for their spare time, if they have any as moms and dads. So, you know, I would just sort of make it really slow. Oh, those are bestsellers. They're out all the time, you know, some kind of thing. And pretty soon that stopped, because I think they figured out that I figured out what was going on. And it wasn't their 6-year-old child that was reading, you know, a racy bestseller. But for the most part, I think we try to do our best. We don't deny access. The only policy that my library has, we also provide audio described DVDs to our patrons. And that's something that the Perkins Library does above and beyond the NLS materials that we have available. So we have a policy that basically says we will not loan R-rated DVDs to anyone under the age of 18. Mm-hmm. So that one's pretty straightforward to implement, because it's a policy that we have put in place. Ratings guidelines also support that. And that's really the one policy that we have that we're pretty firm about. With respect to the DVDs, but not so much with books or other types of requests.
Right.
Yeah, and this is Mike. I can add to that. I mean, as librarians, we are trained that intellectual freedom is paramount. And we do not censor, as Director Broughton said, NLS doesn't censor. That doesn't mean that there can't be some discretion in what we all fondly call the reference interview, which is, I think, what Kim was alluding mm-hmm. to. So that, you know, a conversation may be warranted, but in terms of suggestions or, well, have you thought about this? But when it comes down to it, we will not restrict. And I think it's a rare case that you have a 7-year-old, for example, calling about an advanced adult book. You might have your 13-year-old though, and that's okay. In California, you know, maybe because we're out way out west, and it's the wild west, but we let people read what they want. And it's never been an issue for us. It's fine, and we don't either. We also circulate descriptive DVDs, and even though there are some rules about it, we have not found that we needed to restrict R-rated material. We haven't had requests for it from youth, oddly enough. Maybe somebody who's 17 or 18, but that's about it. So, but generally, we err on the side of that all may read whatever they wish.
And I'll kind of close this out. So when we started with that question on what could be considered a really good and balanced approach, common sense, which we also know is sometimes not so common, it's important that we just kind of understand, just as Kim and Mike have said, and as a library, we really do find it very hard to say no. But in my role, however, it's important to know as a librarian, we love to work with parents to make sure they understand what information is, what's available, and what they could be thinking about on their own with their child. So when we think about what's currently going on, let's say a child's cell phone or social media, one could also ask, what is a common sense approach to looking at that? So we would look at it from a librarian standpoint, which has already been said wonderfully, that we would be looking at maturity level, because everybody's a little bit different. I know my parents definitely were extremely open-minded, but yet very religious. And when I wanted certain books, my parents were like, all right, you can read it. Just don't get up 3 o'clock in the morning telling us that you can't sleep, because we don't want to hear it. And I knew that was my lesson. Right then and there, if you want to read The Shining, have at it. Just know, don't come crying to us. So know that we like to make sure that parents are aware of reading levels, and with that, allowing the parents to have these conversations about the NLS catalog being open and that it has a variety of experiences that one can involve themselves in. So we really want to make sure that and working with parents, that the book is really appropriate for them, but also knowing that if they felt comfortable and like to read that, it is perfectly fine to do so, because we like to work with parents and help them make the best decisions.
Okay. Thank you. Can I add to that too?
Sure.
So when we think about the NLS library, we also have to realize that we don't restrict print students from being able to get certain parts of the catalogs. It's open catalog, and we need to be treating these youth the same way as we treat a sighted child. And so, like, they have to have access to these books and have the ability to get their hands on books in Braille that another print student could go to a bookstore and buy as well.
Megan, that is a perfect lead-in for my next question for Director Broughton, which is, what parental acknowledgments are required for sighted minors to access the Library of Congress and other collections for sighted?
Now that becomes a very unique question for our conversation. I have a specific role, and I'm the director of NLS, which means that I specifically work with a very set and important user group that is non-sighted or print disabled. In answering your question, unfortunately, I can't give you much on it, because the library part for the sighted is not one that I oversee. And so with that would be something different. But know that, as I said, this policy is library-wide. So anybody below the age of 18 will have to have from the Library of Congress, again, a taxpayer-funded entity by Congress, will need to have a parental acknowledgement sign-off to get anything out of the Library of Congress, which includes NLS.
Okay, and this is my final question, and it's kind of just a wrap-up, and we've already kind of touched on it a bit. But what can we do collectively to ensure that all blind and visually impaired minors continue to have access to the NLS amazing collection.
You guys want me to start? Because I can talk about us all day. You know, I'm in love with my job.
I was
Mike, go ahead.
Yeah, let me just interject. I mean, I think that we have to have our own policies, our own collection development or collection building. NLS has their policy. California State Library has our policy. I believe Perkins does. Mm-hmm. We live and die by that policy. It doesn't mean that we won't get challenged and how we respond to those challenges going forward. Every institution is a little bit different, but I like to think that it's part of our library bloodline that we fight for the right to read for all of our patrons going forward. And these are interesting times, so we don't always know what's coming down the pike at us. We got to stick true to our principles.
Yeah. I certainly echo what Mike has said. Policies and guidelines help us to provide the services in an equitable way. And the other thing that I believe in, and I think there's never enough of it, is communication. Mm-hmm. So I'm always trying to think of all the different ways that we can better communicate directly with schools that are providing services to blind and low vision students, communicating and partnering with rehabilitation agencies in our given states, because they have access to a lot of the youth in the state that are signing up for services with transition planning going on and that sort of thing. Communicate with newsletters, social media. We just started an Instagram account at my library. So we have a Facebook, we have a Twitter X account. So Instagram was the next one. And just making sure that we're doing things in social media, because I do believe that a younger population, which is what most of our parents would be, are watching social media. So there is a role for communicating information about our program in general, not specifically the parental acknowledgement, but just trying to heighten and build that awareness among librarians, among public libraries, school libraries, administrators. It's a big task and a big requirement, but we try to really continue to communicate, find ways where maybe we can put an article in the Massachusetts Teacher Association newsletter or their magazine, because there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of teachers out there, to try to get those opportunities where a message can be delivered to a number of, you know, the target audience that we want to get the word out to. So I'm a huge believer in communicating however we can, just about the service, that it exists. We want to sign up more kids who are eligible.
Well, I'll jump in. And Kim, you said the most wonderful things. I will not rehash all that you have just said, because it is so important. I would say, from my perspective, tonight's conversation is an opportunity to hear from parents directly, also hear from network libraries. We do this monthly or every other month in a very unique way with our network libraries to just have conversation. And boy, do they give us conversation. Some of them are on this call and they give us lots of conversation. And when I say that, know that they are the voice of the user. They are the people who are right there in that state, in that county or city, that connects to them directly, utilizing our service. And in addition, depending on the state, additional services that their state might want users to have. So in having conversations like tonight, it has helped us, and I know a lot of my staff on the call, just understand what the challenges are, what the frustrations can be. And what we do with that is, guess what? At least under my leadership, my staff can tell you, we make adjustments. Things have changed. And I know the network has gotten a little bit infuriated with me sometimes, but I know they still love me. They know where my heart is at and what I sometimes am going through. But it does mean I hear you. And if we have to change, we do so. And with that, I hope that we can all go together on this, because when it comes to conversations like this, it is best to do it this way. How do we go off and do this together and make sure that people continue to have access, even if there are some adjustments and changes, in the least possible way it can impact the user, which is what we don't want to have happen at all. We want them to be where our mission and vision say that all may read.
I love that. Megan and Alicia, do you have anything to add to that? And Savannah?
I just want to say it's been wonderful to hear from the NLS staff and regional librarians, and your passion and commitment is the same as ours as school districts and literacy leaders. You know, we want our students reading. And we're going to do what we need to do to make that happen. And it's wonderful to continue building a partnership.
Okay. Megan and Savannah, do you have anything to add?
I think it's all been well stated.
Okay, thank you very much. So, Natalie, do we have any hands? At this time, we could take questions from the audience.
You do. You have one. Suzanne?
Hi. Yeah, this is Suzanne Amen, and I'm on the board of AABT, and I'm actually the person that brought this issue to AABT when I stumbled on it someplace back last fall, and I was pretty freaked out. I'm less freaked out now than I was, but I also, as April, I was an NLS user with the black boxes and the webbing with the records when I was a little kid, and went to the tapes and the cassettes and now the Bard, and I love NLS, and I also can't imagine what would happen to a child that can't read or listen to reading or read Braille. And I was not a Braille reader, so I taught myself in college. But what I wanted to say is, what happens to the kids whose parents don't respond? And I guess if they say no, there's nothing you can do, right? There's no other option but to respect them. But if they don't come through for whatever reason, I got this idea from a couple of places, our Lions Club that does some things with providing glasses to kids in schools that the school nurse refers, and they try to reach out and get the kid help. And also from a concept called microboards that the ARC uses, that has a couple of people. So if you have a child in, say, Megan's school district, and the parent is not responding, that you could get NLS services by several people agreeing to that for the welfare of the child. Because we know that if kids don't really read at their grade level or understand or have literacy at their grade level of 3, they don't succeed in life. That has been pretty well documented. I'm a history professor. I see kids in college that have not learned to read, and it is very difficult for them to succeed. So I want to work on those gaps that that Kim and Mike talked about that haven't come through, that haven't responded. And I feel sorry for the ones that have been said no, but the other ones, is there any way we can come across some collective societal way to help them get access to those books and those stories and all those imaginations and all the images, especially blind kids need to have the world around them described? Anyway, thanks.
This is Mike. Thank you so much. That's really helpful. I think that the number of outright no's is very minuscule. I mean, we've had one, I think. I don't know, Kim, if you had
anyone? One or two. Yeah, not very many flat out no's.
Yeah, I think it's the difficulty reaching people is what it comes down to. Mm-hmm. We're going to keep trying, and hopefully we'll get there. If not immediately, then soon.
Can I add one last thing for Director Broughton?
Yes.
One of the most happy days of my life was when I held a stack pass in the Library of Congress as a grad student at Georgetown. The most proud thing. And I thought, boy, how many people would not even understand what I was talking about?
The library world. The library world.
I love those tunnels, and I go to the music library and the Slavic library, and I had a blast.
Well, I'm glad you did. It's still here. It is still here and going. Just many more people and new people have experienced the same thing you did.
That's right.
Hey, Natalie, do we have any other hands?
You do. You have three hands. Josh, you can go ahead.
Yes, thank you. This is Josh Easter from South Dakota Braille and Talking Book Library, and we're a regional library for the state of South Dakota. We are more of a rural state with, a small population. And one of the things that we are really glad that NLS went this way, because there's a lot of legislation going through our state legislature right now, in fact, and we had one passed last year as well, that removes protections for librarians and staff and educators as well if they put certain materials into kids' hands that are deemed obscene. So having parents sign off and say they're going to have access, it's up to you to be the parent, really does help us. And it kind of mirrors what American Printing House for the Blind does for APH federal quota funds, because we're unique. We also do that for our Department of Education for our textbooks. And so they do require a parental signature as well. So we're just thankful here that we have kind of a protection because of the parental acknowledgement. And we are a small state, so we have like 100 kids or so, and we're down to about 20 that we're still trying to contact parents. So
that's an amazing return rate.
Yeah, it is. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Mary Hopp, you're next.
Hello. My name is Mary Hopp, and I'm on the board of the Library Users of America, and I really have enjoyed listening to everyone's different perspectives. Am I right in understanding that this process has to be done annually, and if it's hard to keep up with it for this first time, how is it going to be kept up with annually?
Given our conversation, I'll jump in on this point. We are focusing first on the individual accounts. And so with that, this is a process that would go up until there are 18. And that would be that. It would
They just have to sign it once then. Yeah.
Correct.
Okay.
Yes, yes.
Okay, because that's what...
This is an individual account conversation.
Okay.
Now, this does mean we are going to be working with the network on what it might look like for institutions, but that process is forthcoming, and we will be heading in that direction in the coming weeks and months.
Okay. Well, then my friend's patron advisor did understand it correctly for the individual accounts. He's also on the board that they only have to do it once. Thank you.
You are welcome.
All right. And just as, to let, sorry.
As a parent, I'm really glad to hear it was a one-time thing.
Yes.
As a student, I'm really glad to hear that it was just one thing.
I am quite sure. And we are pleased that you are pleased.
As the parent of that student, she appreciates it, because I stopped really kind of following what she was reading probably around the age of 14, but she was always very responsible. And so, like, to have to constantly be approving everything drove me crazy.
All right. You have two hands. Connie, you are up.
Hello. So this has been very enlightening. My name is Connie Bateman, and I'm on the board of American Association of Blind Teachers, and former member of the Braille and Talking Book Library User Advisory Council here in California. So
we
know
miss you, Connie.
Thank you. Yeah. And the reason I bring that up is because that's one way to get involved, because there's usually, someone on the... I was representing California Council of the Blind, but, in the past there has been a parent representative, there's been a youth representative, so it's a great way to get involved, because you find out what goes on with the regional library and what's coming down the road. And so anyway, this has been a great discussion, great conversation, and I look forward to an ongoing partnership with all of us.
All right, and for right now, your last hand is Jason.
Hello. I didn't really have a question, but as a blind person who has been a library user pretty much all my life, I just wanted to thank y'all for the job you do. You pretty much open up a world to a new way of seeing the world. And thank you, all of you.
And I can tell you, the number of NLS book boxes that I have seen over the years has made me very appreciative of you guys.
I think she's especially appreciative that those giant book boxes get sent back and she doesn't have to store them in her house.
And this is Kim, and I just want to say thank you to Jason and to all of you for those kind words, and they do mean a lot. I talk to my staff who often will say to me, this job is so wonderful because people call us and tell us how great we are all the time. And they really love that. I mean, it's great motivation for them because really every now and then we get a grumpy one, but for the most part, people are so appreciative and so kind and acknowledge the work we do and appreciate it. And that means a lot to us. So thank you.
And I'm going to second that emotion.
And this is Megan Lindberg again, and I'm just going to put a little plug out there for Braille Challenge. When I went as a parent to the national level, the parents all said that the students that get to the national level, they're usually the kids that have all the NLS book boxes being mailed back and forth to their house. Savannah went 4 times? To national, five times to National Braille Challenge.
Wow.
Awesome.
Good for you, Savannah.
Thank you.
Hey, I just want to thank all of you for taking your time to participate on the panel tonight and also to ask questions. And I think it's been a fantastic conversation. I've learned a lot. And if we have no other hands, I think I will say goodnight. So, Natalie, I want to thank you for your time and the streamers and Clubhouse hosts, and most especially our panelists. So,
great to be in community with all of you. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.